Okay, so I want to share with you a nice article that I certainly enjoyed by Rabbi Sacks on Valoscha. I was a little surprised because I thought maybe we did it, but it really appears not. The Jewish people complain a lot in Valoscha. It's really when the wheels fall off the bus of like the Jewish people in the desert. And there's no question that the turning point is when Moshe really loses it. So I think the question that we have to try to figure out is why does Moshe lose faith in the people? There's no question that he never loses faith in God, but why does he loses faith in the people to the point where he requests that God should have him die? That really doesn't make so much sense. And he's not the first leader of the Jewish people to complain. Eliyahu complains, Yonah complains, Yirmiyahu complains. So it's not really such a big deal that he could complain, but like, why would he lose faith? What happened that kind of broke everything with the Jewish people? So that's what I want to try to explore a little bit together tonight. So, say again.
So I was always struggling with whether he loses a little bit of faith in Hashem too, because Hashem tells him, don't worry, I'm going to take care of it. I'll make sure that the people will eat. And he continues and says, am I going to have all these oxen or cattle to slaughter that I'm going to be able to feed all these people? And then Hashem has to tell him, Hayat Hashem Tiftzar, do you think I can't do it?
Right.
He almost feels like Moses almost wavering in his own faith.
Yeah, I hear that. So that's a good question. I'm sure there is like a way to like spin it that's like Hayat Hashem Tiktzar is not really like a moment of loss of faith. I know that there Rashi comments when he gets punished for hitting the rock and says like, well, that's a Chil Hashem. That's not the only time he was Mechal Shem Shemayim. He was also Mechal Shem Shemayim here. So it's private, it's public, whatever. Rabbi Sacks is of the opinion that's, and again, we'd have to try to figure out how he works around those psukim, but it's his main crisis of faith is a lack of faith in the people. But Henry, I hear your point. It's a good one. I don't know. We'd have to explore it a little bit more. So we start from Pasuk Aleph. The people were complaining, they were murmuring in the ears of God. God hears it, and he's angry. So God consumes them with a fire, and he eats up the edge of the machaneh. The people daven to Moshe. And Moshe davens to God, and the fire is put out. By Krashim and Makomahu Taveira, so the place gets the name Taveira, ki varavam eish Hashem, because the fire of God consumed them there. Okay, so that's one. They're just complaining. What are they complaining about? Too long, the journey, something. Or I think Rabbi Franz is the one that I saw it. Say it. It's like they're complaining just like for nothing. There's no real content to their complaints. They're complaining just for the sake of complaining. And of course, we've met that person once or twice in life.
But has so just in a way diminish what happened to Nadam and Aviyu, because Nadam and Aviyu was supposed to be like a Kiddush Hashem, and this is not a Kiddush Hashem. Maybe it is that it's the same process almost that.
Well, I mean, I think it would be like the clearest way of divine retribution. I mean, like we even talk about that. Like, you know, we use like the expression lightning strikes out of, you know, lightning will come down from heaven and strike us down. But that's essentially the same thing. You get burnt that way. I mean, well, say that one more time, Greg.
They were burned from the inside. There was no physical burning on the outside.
Right. That's right. The Medrash says that. I mean, you can make the same argument here about Tivar Vam, that they burnt within them. I mean, it's probably just burnt them.
I hear it. There's definitely are similarities. Again, it could just be that that's like the clearest way of punishing people. Not sure. But it's interesting how quickly the people rebound back and they're like, no, God, don't do that. Right. Moshe, talk to God. Right. Let him stop. This is terrible. And so God listens to Moshe's tefilos, and that's the end of it. Pasuk Dalet, v'ha'asaf suf asher b'kirbo hitavu tava. So the asaf suf, which Rashi points out is the Erev Rav, but they're basically the riffraff, right? They're the dregs of society. So they wanted things. V'yashuvu v'yivku gam b'nei Yisrael, and the Jews also come and they cry, v'yomeru mi'achilenu basar. And they say, who's going to give us meat? We remember what we ate in Egypt for free, the fish. The gourds, the watermelon, the leek, the onion, and the garlic. That's what they longingly remember from Egypt. And now, our souls are dry. All we have is the man in our in our eyes. The man kizragadhu, and the man was like coriander seed. The eino kein habedolach, and its color was bedolach, which is like I think it's like a diamond or a gem, something like that. Shatu am v'laktu v'tachnu barechayim. The people would take it and they would grind it in the mill, odachu b'mendocho vishu baruor, and then they would cook it, vasu oto ugot, and they would bake it into cakes, vayat tamo ketam l'shad hashamen, and its taste was like the taste of oil. So I had an interesting discussion last Shabbos with my neighbor Michael Lavner, where we discussed like why it is that the Medrash feels the need to make this meal any fancier. Right? Why does man have to be so fancy? Right? Like, why does man have to be, it tastes like anything we want? Right? Like, why can't man just be like what it sounds like? It sounds like it is a...
They'll get boring real fast. Three meals a day, the exact same thing. I mean, that was their complaint.
Right, so it is interesting because that would like kind of substantiate their complaints, right? Like it's the famous question, right? Like there's the Kellogg's like 8-pack of cereal. If you had to pick one, only one for the rest of your life, could you do that? It's so hard, right? Like love Apple Jacks, but to have Apple Jacks every day, forever and ever. Yeah, so it's hard. So I don't know. I mean, it was probably sarcastic, especially because I am keeping track of how many days we're locked in. So I think it was like day like number 85 when we had this conversation. And after spending 85 days with my children, right, like I do understand and appreciate why the Medrash would want to employ something like that, because parents that were, you know, locked into the desert also for a long time, their kids kvetch and complain, oh, we're eating the same thing again, man, right? So the Medrash wants to make it even more like, look how good it was, right? The man could taste like anything you wanted, and yet they still complain. I don't know. I mean, I think slowly your point is a fair one, like that's what's motivating it. But it seems like the Medrash is just like really like where is it even getting that from? So I don't know. So what happened? We read that the Talal Machin Alayla Yered Aman Alav, and when the dew would come on the floor of the desert at night, the man would come on top of it. Moshe heard the people crying by their families, each man by the entrance to his tent. God gets really angry. And uve'inei Moshe ra. It's bad in the eyes of God. Now, this is not the first time that God has gotten... What, say that again?
Uve'inei Moshe ra.
I'm sorry, did I say God? I apologize. Yeah, it's bad in the eyes of Moshe. But, okay, this is not the first time that God has gotten angry in the psukim. right? Pasuk Aleph, Vayishma Hashem, Vayichara Po, God hears and he gets angry. Here, same thing, Vayichara Af Hashem, Ma'od, God gets really angry. So if God was a little angry the first time around, now God is extraordinarily angry. Okay, and Moshe, what's Moshe? Moshe, it's bad in Moshe's eyes. Why is that? What happened here? Like, first off, this is new, entering in Moshe's disappointment that did not exist earlier. So we have to try to understand why that is. Why does Moshe get all, you know, bent out of shape about this? And why does God get angry about? So those are good questions, I think. The Mefarshim obviously are bothered by that too, right? So first off, what were the people complaining about?
It's really the bond, you know, not being out of flavor. But if you look at the whole thing, the fires were on the edge of the Machne, which is where the Erev Rav was in the first place.
Okay.
So the fire really directed towards the Erev Rav, and then people realized they're listening to the wrong person, and then 2 minutes later, they're listening to the Erev Rav again.
Okay, well, the Erev Rav doesn't complain until after the people on the edge of the camp get burnt. Right, yeah, so
the people in the edge of the camp were the Erev Rav. They weren't allowed to be inside the Machne.
Okay, I hear that. But, right, okay, so Greg wants to say that it's like, I guess, if I am summing it up right, you can give me you can let me know if I got it. It's basically they're complaining, like, Erev Rav are like the instigators. And now the basic complaint is, like, we want better food, right? So it would seem that way. So, but what happens? Like, Shema Moshe Ta'am. Moshe here is the people, Boche L'mishpechotav. What are the people doing? They're crying L'mishpechotav. Now, that's weird. Crying L'mishpechotav, crying to their families. Right. If you really, it should be they're crying with their families. Right. So it'd be boche b'mishpechotav. Right. They're crying with their families. Why is it saying that they're crying to their families or for their families? So that's when Rashi enters into the picture. I didn't have to write Rashi because I found the Chasam Sofer to be even more puzzling. So I figured once I already put that in there, we don't really have to beat up on Rashi all that much. But let's take a look at, it's not in the page, but I'll share with you Rashi, my handy-dandy Chumash that's here. So Rashi says, sorry, what Pasuk? It's Pasuk Yud, okay? Sorry, I was looking at Pasuk Aleph. Rashi says, Bochel mishpechotav. What does that mean? So he says, Mishpechot nesafim ubochim lefarseim tarumotam begalui. So Rashi gives the first answer, which is Pshat. Pshat is Bochel Mishpechotav. They're crying with their families, or they're crying to their families. What does that mean? It means that, like, they all went outside right in front of their tent and they started crying about, like, their plight. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, I can't believe we're stuck with this awful food. And they cry and they cry and they cry collectively. And that is what that's what they're crying about. But then Rashi adds in one of these comments that makes you wonder, why does Rashi have to even write this? V'rabotenu amru, Chazal tell us, l'mishpechotav aliskei mishpechot. They were complaining about the nature of family, al arayot hanesrot lahem, about the arayos that were usher to them. Now what does that mean? What arayos were usher to them that they're complaining about? Basically, what Rashi is saying is they're crying l'mishpechotav. They're crying about their family. Why? Because this guy would say, oh, I can't believe I'm not allowed to sleep with my, fill in the blank, some member of his family.
Really?
Yeah, so like that's, I mean, now, what certainly the Medrash does explain why Moshe goes nuts. Right? Meaning, if you're going around the camp and it started off saying, the food is bad and I can't believe I can't sleep with my sister, it's like a pretty big nosedive. You know what I'm saying? Like, you sit there, you're like, that's a head scratcher. How did that happen? Like, how did we get from point A to point B. So that's a really tough one. But again, I'm not
are we sure that we even got to point B? That's someone reading something into the words that's not necessarily there.
Yeah.
Do we have to agree that that's what it means?
I struggle with that medrash. Meaning, like, you see, this is where I we're recording and I have to be very careful how I say this, right? But, like, if Rashi said that the men were all sitting there saying, I can't believe we're stuck with our wives and that's it, I could hear that. Meaning, I actually think that the thread of, like, the food, we're eating the same thing, and it's the same woman. I think there's, like, a correlation there that I could kind of, like, I could wrap my head around it a little bit. Meaning, you know, like I had said that's the, you know, like the question of picking one cereal for the rest of your life. You can do that with everything. I can't believe I'm stuck in the same job, the same this, the same that, forever and ever and ever. That's when a person feels like, okay, we're stuck, right? But, like, that's not where Rashi goes with that. Rashi's going, no, like, they're not complaining about arayos. They're complaining about familial arayos. So that one, I have a hard time with that. I don't know. I've always struggled with that Rashi. And it's interesting because Rashi doesn't have to go that route. Rashi has pshat, which is like a pretty good explanation. I mean, I wish I had a real Mikros Gedolos. Like, this is just a Chumash and Rashi. It has the Iker Sifsei Chachamim. It doesn't have all of them. But it would be curious to look at what the Sifsei Chachamim have to say, if maybe there is like a reason why Rashi felt motivated to have to say all of that. Okay, so I would guess that probably many of us are bothered by Henry's point, that it just seems like this is not pshat. Fair? Okay. So let's take a look at the Chasam Sofer. I don't know why we don't very often look at the Chasam Sofer, but this morning I found it, and I thought it was definitely a head-scratcher. So I figured worth putting it in there. So the Chasam Sofer does point out, Vayishma Moshe ta'am bochel mishpechotav, Vaychar af Hashem ma'od, Uveinei Moshe ra. It was bad in the eyes of Moshe. Now, interestingly, it starts off that telling us that what? Vayishma Moshe. Moshe hears, and yet it's ra be, it's not ra be'oznei Moshe, but it's ra be'enei Moshe. It's bad in Moshe's eyes. So Venira Diita Bisvarim, the Otan Shemetu Biltimutukanim Notena Kosh Baruch Nishmotein Bechaya O Behemetora, Becharkach Ochlemehem, Aide Shita Kshera. What happens when a person dies and they've got like unfinished business on earth? Meaning they didn't do quite enough. What happens to them? So in the movies, what happens to them? They're put back on the planet again, and they have a chance to fix what they did wrong. In the Hasidish stories, what happens to them? They come back, and they're, you know, the poor person or whatever. They have a chance to fix themselves up. That's not what the Chasam Sofer says. He says that those people that died, that needed some measure of tikkun, what happens is God puts their neshamas in the animals of the world, the kosher animals, of course, and afterwards they're eaten. Al-yidei shchita kasheira, by good shchita, v'tikuno, and they're fixed. U'bazehu metakin agilgulim ba'ota behema. That is how the people find rest. Everybody good so far? Well, at least, like, what?
No, it's weird.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine that? Like, I mean, you want to talk about, like, really weird, like, if Rashi's optics aren't bad enough, right? The new optics are, right? Someone dies, they were pretty good, but they've got, like, a couple loose ends left. They become the steak or the chicken, at like the family barbecue. And after you eat whomever, the person goes straight to Olam Haba. Yeah, all right, I don't know. It's a little strange. So he says, V'nei b'shloshim me'a fe'lo, during choshech, meitu arba chalokim Yisrael, when choshech came, 4/5 of the Jewish people died. Kidita berashi parshas bo, v'ayunish mosem, netunu betocha behemot v'chayot. So what happened? Where did those 80% of the Jews go? They went into the livestock and to the animals of the Jewish people. And why? In order that their neshamos should be fixed. Moshe was melamed zchus on the Jewish people, that this is what happened to them. God knows. Moshe heard the people. So what is Rav? He said, "Perish Moshe ya mevin mitoch am shayu bochim mishchotav, k'moshe amru le'el haynol iske tikunim shel metim mishchotam." Why are they crying? This is what the Chasam Sofer suggests. Vayishma Moshe ta'am. Moshe hears the people bochel mishchotav. They're crying over the fact that their family members are not having a chance to be eaten, so that they can't get the, Henry, your face is priceless. It's great. Like, that like steady head shake. Yeah. Like, they're crying because they wanted their family members to be shechted, but they couldn't shecht them because they were busy eating man. And he says, but, Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yodeya, Haya Shelo Hayal Zeh Haya Kavanatam. Moshe, God says, I know what the kavana of the Jewish people are. Vayichar Hashem afapo. Vayichar af Hashem. God gets really angry. Uveinei Moshe ra pirish al shakodesh baruch hu char aleihem ki Moshe haya melamed zchus aleihem. It was bad in the eyes of God that it was bad in the eyes of Moshe. The explanation is that God was angry at the Jews ki Moshe haya melamed zchus aleihem, because Moshe was melamed zchus. Moshe couldn't wrap his head around the fact that God was angry at the Jewish people because he was being melamed zchus, that the Jewish people wanted to eat their dead to give them a kapara rather than that they were complaining. Yeah. Okay, Rashi's sounding a whole lot better now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, all right. It's weird. So, I don't know. What I think is interesting, and this is, to me, is the real reason. I mean, I actually, the big piece of the Chasam Sofer is that when it says Uveinei Moshe Ra, it's that Moshe was not, and this is a big piece of it, it's not that Moshe's angry at the people. It's bad in Moshe's eyes that what happened, that God is angry at the Jews. Say that again.
It's bad in Moshe's eyes that God was angry because Moshe was not only to the Kav's
close. Right. Yeah, yeah. So
the Jews were bad.
Yeah, he's not angry at the Jews. He's angry that God is mad at the Jews. So that's a big reach in the Psukim. But I want us to hold that for a sec and take a look at the Kli Yakar. Vaychar af Hashem v'nei Moshe ra, dafka achshav. Now, specifically, it's bad. Before, it was bad in God's ears. Now it's bad in God's eyes. Why? So, because Moshe didn't understand before what was going on. But now it's clear to Moshe, even, that like the Jewish people are in a bad place. It's quite the contrast between the Kli Yakar and the Chasam Sofer. So, I don't know if I'm settled with Rashi. I don't know if I'm settled with... I shouldn't say I don't know. I know I'm not settled with the Chasam Sofer. That really does not sit well with me. I'm not sure the Kli Yakar either. But let's take a look as the Psukim continue. So, Vayomer Moshe al Hashem. Moshe says to God, Lama hareot al avdecha, v'lama tzat lichem beinecha, l'sum ma'asak al mazeh alai. Why did you give me this job? Hanochi Ariti Kalama Ze. Did I give birth to this nation? Imanochi Liditiu, Kitomar Lai Sa'eu Bechekecha. That therefore you should say to me, I should carry them in my arms. Kasher Yisahu Main et Ayonek Al Adamash Nishpata Labotav. The way a yonek, right, the nursemaid, would carry the baby. So Moshe is saying, hey, like, I didn't sign up for this. This is really, really not fair, and this is very hard work. Well, these psukim shoot a big hole in whose pshat?
Chasam Sofer.
Yeah, Chasam Sofer is the idea that Moshe is angry at, like, is not angry at the people, seems to be lost in that. What's Moshe saying here in these two psukim? Right, what's Moshe's problem in these psukim?
He doesn't want to be responsible for the people. They're not his.
Right, I don't want to be responsible for the people. They're not mine. And what? I didn't sign up for this job. It's too much work. That's what he's saying. So the Ksava Kabbalah, I think, has an amazing pshat. Let's take a look at it. Just a couple lines. So he says, "A mechavim b'zeh lama taseini k'uman k'omen v'lo k'omenet." What is an omen? Right? He says, "What? Where was it? Right? Kasher yisah ha'omen et hayonek." Like the omen would the nursemaid would hold the child, but an omen is zachar nekeva. Yeah. Right, it's masculine. So because it's masculine, right, the Ksava Kabbalah points out, it's not, he doesn't use ka'omenet, but he says ka'omen. Ka'omenet kasher tisat yonekim yivket hifaiseyu. What happens if a woman is holding a child and the child begins to cry? Tifaisu betitalo mechelev shadayim. She just has to nurse the baby and the baby likely will stop crying. Avala omen shubal, but the man, what does he do? V'ish lo yachol afayis et atinok. He can't take care of the child, right? I mean, that's not exactly what he says. He says he can't calm down the child, but it's truth to the way I said it also. V'im yivkeh, the kid starts crying, ein lo shadayim, right? There, he has no breasts, v'chalav yifaisubam, and therefore he can't milk the baby. Right, that's, I think, an amazing, 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 you know, explanation. What the Ksava Kabbalah is saying is Moshe's complaint is not that he's saying, I didn't want the job, but he's saying, I don't have the tools to do the job. You know, I remember when, this probably happened with one of my first children, because, like, as you have more, you like give up hope on some of these things. But I remember one of my kids once, Malki was not home and was crying hysterically, and all I had was the bottle, and like, you know, the bottle was just not working. And I tried everything, right? Like I held the bottle this way, that way, and like there's such, you reach the point where like the best Hebrew word for it is you're misyayish. I just give up. And you turn to the baby, you're like, I, what do you want from me? Like, this is, like, way above my pay grade. Like, I cannot nurse you. So what do you want me to do? Like, there's nothing I can do. That's what the Ksava Kabbalah says. I think it's an amazing, amazing answer. And I think it puts the psukim into context. The Jewish people make a complaint. We're not happy with the man. They then go and cry. And then Moshe says, like, what do you want me to do? We're in the middle of the desert. I don't have food for 3 million people. Like, Azma, what do you want from me? That's a Ksava Kabbalah. So then he says, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Me'ayin li basar latet l'chol ha'am hazeh. Where do you want me to find meat to give to everyone?
Sorry, that's not an acceptable response to Moshe. Everything that Bnei Israel asked of him wasn't for him to solve himself. They didn't have water. He didn't have a pocket full of water. He has such that he got water. It was hot. He didn't ask for that in a cover, but Hashem provided everything. So.
Okay, so I like that, David. So, David, what you did is you poked a nice hole in the Ksava Kabbalah, where it's not a fair complaint, which is fine for me, because I think Rabbi Sacks has a better answer than the Ksava Kabbalah, but the Ksava Kabbalah was, I think, the closest answer, at least, that gave me, like, a little bit of comfort. But yeah, I think it's a fair point. That's not, Moshe's not the one that has to come up with the answers. He has to go to God and say, God, like, where's the solution? But he says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, so me'ayin basar, where's the meat? How am I going to feed everyone? Like, what do you want from me? You're kifku alayle mor tanale basar v'nochele, you're asking me for meat? I don't have any. Lo chalon ochi levadi laseite kol am hazeh, ki kaved mimeni. Right? I cannot do all this by myself. I cannot hold all the people by myself. There, it's too much work. V'im kachat oseli, and if that's what you really want from me, hargeni na harog, ki matzati chayminecha, v'ale rebrati, then kill me. He says, that's it. I'm happy to die. I don't need this. It's not worth it. Right? I quit. What's God's answer going to be? Right? We don't have the psukim here, but what's God's response to this? Moshe says, it's too much work. I can't handle it. I don't know what to do. What's the answer he gets? So he's told to get the slav, that's true, but that's going to give them the meat. But that's not the only thing. The real answer that God has, and that's the end of the parasha, is what? God says, I want you to appoint what?
Assistants.
Right, who are the assistants? You need to get the 70 men, right? Six per shevet, you'll lottery it out to get rid of the two extras. Right, El Dadameh, Dadar Mitnavim, Amachaneh. Right, you're appointing the Sanhedrin. That's the direct response to Moshe. I can't do this. It's too much work. So what does God say? You're right. It is too much work. I have a solution. What's the solution? Go hire Sanhedrin to work with you. Moshe has not been retired yet. Right? That's going to happen later. Right? That's going to happen after he hits the rack. But that's not until 38 years later. Right now, Moshe is saying it's too much work, and God says, fine, you're right, it is too much work. So this is what I'm going to recommend. Go hire yourself a Sanhedrin. What was Moshe's... where was Moshe's mess up? That's really the question. So I want to share with you, unless somebody wants to suggest an answer, I want to share with you a great answer by Rabbi Sacks. So this is what he says. So hold on 1 second.
Moshe's being a bit sarcastic, almost.
In which way?
You know, I can't give them meat. What do you want me to do? If I, this is the job, just kill me. Really?
So, right. So you could read it as sarcastic. You could read it as dramatic. But you could also read it as, like, Moshe's, like, just done. Like, he... And it's been only 1 year. But Moshe's like, this is like a really, really, or 2 years. This is brutal. Like, why are they complaining every step along the way? Just like, let it go. So, the question is, when you have a leader, what's the leader's job? Right? What are they supposed to do? So, they're supposed to lead. But what does that mean exactly, to lead? So, He says like this, sometimes when you have a leader, what the leader needs to do is, there's a situation where you need one person to drive you through a situation. And like, there are those moments where, like, you know, if you were to use like sports as an analogy, it's that there's only one person that's going to take that last minute shot. So what are you going to do? You're going to turn to your best player, your leader perhaps, and say, like, this is what you have to do. Like, you need to take us on your shoulders, and you need to bring us to the promised land, and you need to help us win this game. That's sometimes what happens. But what in general, is that how leadership always works? So the problem with some leaders believe, and this is not effective leadership, is they believe that they need to do everything, right? They need to fix every problem. They need to solve everybody's issues. That's what they feel. Moshe Rabbeinu sounds like that kind of leader right here. What's he saying? He's saying, right, lo chal nochi levadigla sei kol amazeki chavei b'meni. You want food, you know what, I'm going to tell you. There's not enough food. I don't have a food. What do you want? Do you think I have, if I had food in my pocket, if I had meat in my pocket, I'd give it to you. I don't have any of that. Where's it going to come from? And what are you complaining to your family? What's the big deal? Like, deal with it. And I can't nurse you. And I never had you. You're not my children. It's too much work. Right? So what does he say? I want to die. Rabbi Sacks says what he's really saying is, he's saying, I believe that leadership is like a parent for a baby. Well, a baby has no tools at all to get themselves through a situation. So what happens? The baby needs everything from the parent. That is what Moshe is basically saying. Moshe is saying, I need to do everything. It's too much. I can't do it. Moshe's mistake is that he thinks he needs to do everything for them. So the charismatic leader who does everything for the Jewish people is a very dangerous, dangerous leader. And it rarely works well for the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu certainly would not be the classic charismatic leader, because Moshe himself says, I'm not a good speaker. I'm not effective that way. But Moshe was larger than life. And perhaps that's really where Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake lies, is that he thought that he had to do everything. And he's disappointed with himself that he can't pull it off. So let's take a look at Shmuel Aleph. So Vayiskavtzu kol, third to last source. Vayiskavtzu kol b'nei Yisrael, Yisrael vayavo al Shmuel haramata. All the Jews come to Ramah, to Shmuel. Vayomru elav, hine atazakanta, you're old. Uvanechalo halchu b'drachecha, your children did not follow your ways. Atasima lanu melech l'shavteinu kuchol goyim. We want a king that's going to be for us like all the nations. Shmuel was not happy with this. He prays to God. What were the Jews looking for? They were looking for a king like the nations of the world. What's special about the nations of the world? Their king is an all-powerful king. He is like Melech HaMelachim. That's what the Jewish people were looking for. Shmuel says that's not what it's all about. But who do they get as their king? Next source. Vahi Shecha min Binyamin, Ushmokish ben Aviel, ben Tzor, ben Bechor, ben Afiach, ben Ish Yemini, Gibor Chayil. They appoint who? Shaul. They were talking about this guy, Kish, who has a son, Veloya ben Ushmo Shaul. His name was Shaul. Bachur Vatov, young and good. The Ein Ish Mbrei Sel Tov, Menu Meshechmo, Vamala Gavo Mikolaam. He looked like the most amazing guy. He was tall. He was handsome. He had all the character traits that you would want for a charismatic leader, which is all good, except what happens? His charisma doesn't help, and he falls flat. Moshe Rabbeinu is told to appoint a Sanhedrin because the reminder to him is, it's not all about you. But rather, it's giving everyone responsibility. Shared responsibility is much better than having a leader that does everything for all the people. And Yoshua is like that. That's the truth. And that's what the Gemara in Baba Basra says. The Gemara says, Amru p'nei Moshe k'p'nei Chama, p'nei Yoshua k'p'nei Levana. Moshe's face is like the sun. Yoshua's face is like the moon. Rabbi Sack says, what does that mean? The sun blinds everything and everyone, but the moon lets other candles burn brightly. What God was saying is that the Jewish people, what do you need? You cannot have a leader that's like Moshe, but rather you need a leader that's a little bit dialed down, that gives everybody a person to share the responsibility. Rabbi Sacks ends by saying the following. The crisis in our story is not the lack of meat. It's a lack of leadership. Moshe Rabbeinu is a charismatic, amazing leader, but Moshe Rabbeinu misses the point. Great leaders don't create followers, they create other leaders. People become what their leaders want them to if their leaders give them space to become that. And the larger the space, the greater the people can grow and the farther they can come. That, says Rabbi Sacks, is Moshe Rabbeinu's shortcoming. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't recognize and didn't appreciate the fact that the Jewish people needed some space and they needed more opportunity and they needed someone to let go. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I could fix everything. In a certain sense, Moshe Rabbeinu would be the first snowplow or helicopter parent, whatever we're calling it nowadays, where he steps in and tries to figure out every way to intercede on his children's behalf, which is all very good, except the one downside to that is when you do that, you don't enable and allow the person to grow. I love the way Rabbi Sacks says it. The crisis isn't about the meat. It's about leadership. Great leaders don't create followers, but they themselves create leaders. God gives Moshe Rabbeinu another crack at it when he says, okay, Moshe, what do I want you to do? I want you to go appoint the Sanhedrin. That's the quiet whisper to Moshe Rabbeinu to remind him, you're not getting this right. Does Moshe hear it? Does Moshe really accomplish what he has to? Probably not, because when we get to Parshas Chukas, we see that unfortunately, it seems like Moshe Rabbeinu still falls short and does not allow the people to shine the way they do. Moshe Rabbeinu is like the sun, and he blinds everyone around him. He gets replaced by Yehoshua, who's like the moon, and gives everyone a chance to burn and to shine bright.